Daenerys, I am thrice your age, Ser Jorah said. I have seen how false men are. Very few are worthy of trust, and Dario Naharis is not one of them. Even his beard wears false colors. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners. Episode 316 of the White Book. Man, 316. And neither of the hosts have colored beards this week, right? You haven't done anything yours since last week. I saw you?
Not this week.
Oh, man. One of these days, my wife is going to convince me to do that. For listeners that don't know, I'm Will, and my wife, Kristen, is a hairstylist. We did glitter my beard once for a color run 5K, if you're familiar with those.
Yeah, I've done that before.
The glitter or the color run?
I've done both before.
Nice.
On separate occasions.
Did you do the glitter for it?
No, I didn't.
Well, maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Okay, well, this is a new voice to listeners that I've just kind of thrown right in here without even explaining or anything. Now, some listeners, however, may already recognize my guest host this week. Jesse, why don't you tell them a little bit about why that is?
I am also the host of The Wars to Come. We are a new podcast that started since Gen Con with myself, Chris Thompson, and Alex Black. And we usually have guests on from time to time. So if you're not listening, you should. It's different Game of Thrones content, but it's still very fun. So, and if you,
I enjoy it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I enjoy it as well. And if you haven't heard my voice before, you'll probably see me in a tournament. I travel a lot for this game. So,
yeah, you do really travel quite a bit. I mean, you're not at like Sandy Barnabas levels yet, but you're working hard at claiming.
Yeah, yeah, I'm grinding.
Just to kind of round things out with The Wars to Come, of course, you guys have a website, right? And you post things over on SoundCloud.
Yeah. And then we're on iTunes.
You're on iTunes? Okay, awesome. How often officially are you guys out?
Like, how often do we put up episodes, or how long have we been around?
Sorry, how often do you put up episodes is how I should have worded that.
Sporadically. I don't know. We try to record once every week or two. It's just been very, very tough with Worlds and Stalic and Red Saturday and all this other stuff. Yeah. So during the dead season or the Sword Champ season, you know, we'll try to put out an episode a week. And then, like, just starting a podcast, I'm sure you know, like, none of us were well versed in audio technical stuff. So we've had a couple episodes that have been scrapped, and editing has been a little bit more taxing, but I'm getting better at it. So hopefully we're getting close to that one once a week mark, but you will for sure see an episode bi-weekly usually.
Okay, cool. I hadn't looked super close, but I was kind of thinking you were bi-weekly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, I think now is as good a time as any to go ahead and kick things over to our topic of the week. We've got a review coming up. And as I said last week, or actually 2 weeks ago by the time you listen to this, things have gotten hairy for those same reasons with Worlds and Stalik and Thanksgiving holiday and all. So we're just a review cast for like a month here. So huge props to Jesse for being willing to jump in and help out with that. And he even he didn't really toot his horn as much here as as he could have. I mean, I think he's got some pretty respectable competitive play chops to back up some opinions on these cards, right? Won Windy City last year. You won the Gen Con Melee, which I'm going to be honest, that makes you the Continental Melee champ in North America to me. Final table at Worlds Melee. Did you hit up anything else that I'm missing?
Let's see. I won Summer Hall this year. And then I was able to play well, and I made the cut at like 4 regionals this year, but I couldn't quite close one out.
Oh, I know that feeling.
Yeah. So, I had a pretty good competitive season. I really enjoyed it. Honestly, out of everything, and I know this will sound weird, but out of everything, I wish I could have closed out Melee Worlds. I was close. I was really close. But no, I had a good season. It's a fun game. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
Quite welcome. All right. Well, the pack we're up with this week is the Archmaester's Key. It's the first pack of the new cycle. I forget the exact name of this cycle. Gosh.
This is the Crow cycle?
Sure. I'll take your word for it. Well done.
Yep. This is the Crow cycle.
So we're gonna go ahead. We'll run through the cards in the order they're in the pack. We're gonna go ahead and keep this the way we've been doing it lately. We'll read off cards together for their houses and kind of try to give a conglomerate score for each house that's gonna be on an A through F grading scale, like the American school grading system. So we'll see how it goes. FFG has already thrown us off in this pack, though, by starting us with one neutral card by itself at the beginning of the pack, and then the others at the end. So I'm going to vote that we do fudge the system a little bit and go ahead and do this one neutral card up front by itself as sure. It's listed and go from there.
I'm good with that.
Okay, cool. Do you want to read that first card, or you want me to take the first one?
You can take the first one. It's okay.
Okay. So first up, we have the Archmaester's Key itself, the titular card for this pack. This is a one-cost attachment, neutral, as I said. It is an item and citadel traded card, Maester character only, and action, kneel attached character to choose an event in an opponent's discard pile. Once this phase, you may play that event as if it were in your hand. If you do, place it on the bottom of its owner's deck instead of placing it in that player's discard pile. Honestly, I think this looks pretty cool. I mean, it's an extremely powerful effect, and I think the power level of it obviously is dependent on what your opponent has available to them. But I think another vector there is what character you have available to put this on. I think the smaller, cheaper maesters you've got for this, and the less you're giving up in the challenge phase, the better this looks to me. But it seems interesting, even aside from just
maybe getting to snipe my opponent's nightmares or something. Do you think this stands a chance of helping rein in some of the combo type stuff we've been seeing lately by stripping stuff out of other people's discard pile?
I'm not sure about that. I think there are other better answers for combo. I do believe that this card will see a place in Conclave. I think it will definitely see a place in Tyrell Conclave if that ever becomes a thing, just because if you have this and Emissary of the Hightower essentially doing somewhat of the same thing, just like holding over events, it could be very strong. So I think it's situationally a very good card. I just don't know that it sees its way into a lot of decks unless we see the power level of Conclave become strong. But it is almost store championship season, so we will see some jank. We will see some Conclave, so we might see this card come to the forefront a little bit. I enjoy the mechanics they're using with it, though. Like I think that's very cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a neat twist. I feel like there's been a lot of cards either out recently or previewed for later that have really surprised me in a direction they've taken things. Not mechanics that I really kind of expected to see in Thrones. And I think that's cool.
Yeah, I definitely think Danny is coming into his own. So, putting new spins on the game. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy things of this level.
Oh, I agree. Well, let's see. I'm willing to go out on a limb here with a rating then. Maesters are not a just super prevalent trait that you absolutely have to have for this, the way, you know, lords, ladies, or knights are. So that worries me. It's not going to be ubiquitous. And there's huge potential upside, but also just huge dud side, so to speak. So as intrigued as I am, I think actual kind of card rating, this is probably like a D plus to me.
Yeah, because it's like a maester character only, it could be such a dead card in your hand for a while.
And if my opponent doesn't have an event, that's worth it.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair. Yeah, I'll probably give it a D plus. That's fine. That seems fair. Okay. But in some scenarios, it could be very strong.
Right. That's what I was saying. There is huge upside potential. I'm just worried that low downer spot is going to be more common.
Yep. I agree. Good stuff.
Yeah. All right. You want to kick it over to Stark?
Sure. So I read both of them and then talk about both of them, correct?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. 4 cost character. Intrigue, power, icon, 3 strength, non-unique, Dreadfort Maester. He has House Bolton and Maester traits. Reaction, after you initiate a military or intrigue challenge, sacrifice Dreadfort Maester to raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by 1 until the end of the challenge. Next start card, we have a 3-cost event. 3-cost. Loyal, at night they howl. Challenges action. Choose and stand any number of direwolf characters and characters with a direwolf attachment. So, 1 card's a bad card, and 1 card's a Lannister card. So I feel really bad for Stark.
A Lannister card? Tell me more.
Dreadfort Maester is just a Lannister card, right? Like, you're just going to run that in Lanny Conclave? I just think it's going to be so good with all the other House Bolton stuff. Raising claim.
Yeah.
Oh, not I'm sure.
Drop that in with Marenhall.
Yeah. I mean, like, it just like has better options, I guess. So I think it's very good in Lanny Conclave. I've been pushing.
Lannister's got the non kneeling characters on those challenges.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. And then at night they howl. I mean, I like the cost slot for Maester as well. Like, it's just a good cost slot and a good strength and intrigue power. Like, I enjoy it. And raising claim is always good in this game.
For sure.
And at night they howl, I don't know. That's really, really expensive. for an event to just stand. I mean, like, you're probably in any Direwolf deck, you're probably still running Rob, so this might be just overkill in a slot where you don't have a lot of money anyways. So I give Stark overall like a D.
Oof. Youch. That's low.
It is.
I don't know if I go quite that low. I like the Dreadfort Maester quite a bit. I agree. It looks like it has a really nice home in Lannister, but I think there's going to be Stark decks that want to do work with that claim raising as well. You know, the game, so much of the game just kind of revolves around everyone expecting one claim turn after turn. That, like you said, claim boosting becomes really strong, and Starks can have what, six options now, three of this and three winter is coming. So I think there's some stronger potential there, but I agree, at Night the Howl is really expensive for what it does. At two cost, I think I like it a lot more. So I think
at two, I might even like put like a cheeky one of in my Direwolf deck, but at three, like, it's just virtually unplayable, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's you're gonna need a lot of setup before you get the worth out of it that you need at three gold.
Correct.
So
I just feel like board states are getting so much smaller, and the pack, especially with Valar Dahares here, like, I don't know. I'm not paying three gold to restand like two people.
Yeah. Well, you know, unless it's maybe like a seal of the hand, but then I can do that turn after turn.
Correct.
But I like the Maester enough that I think I probably go up a whole nother letter grade. I do also at least like to see something coming for kind of a side theme for the Dire Wolves. I don't think this quite hits the mark, but I'm glad to see more trying to flesh it out at least.
I want Dreadfort Maester to be really good, so I will concede that I hope I am wrong for sure, because I definitely like Dreadfort Maester.
Okay. On to Tyrell?
Yep.
Cool. All right, so first up, we have a unique Septa Nysterica, maybe, I think. She's a loyal Tyrell character. Cost 3, 1 strength, just a power icon, and the 7 trait. Action, kneel Septa Nysterica to choose an attacking character with strength 4 or lower. Stand that character and remove it from the challenge. And then we've got Oathkeeper. We've seen this one previewed before. This is a one-cost unique Tyrell attachment. It's not loyal. Valyrian Steel and Weapon traits. Attached character gets +2 strength and reaction after you win a challenge by 5 or more strength in which attached character is participating. Sacrifice Oathkeeper to search your deck for a non-Tyrell character. Reveal it and add it to your hand. Shuffle your deck. I think these are pretty cool. Nysterica, I think, is an interesting another take on kind of a strength matters theme for Tyrell. Obviously, they're pushing really hard this stand and remove from challenge thing for Tyrell. Though I think after a certain number of those, I kind of start to dislike that, because I start looking at all these control cards and just think, well, I'm just giving these characters back to my opponent. You know, be that for defense later or dominance or whatever. I don't like so many control cards doing it. Plus, I'm not sold on 3 cost for that 1 strength. Oathkeeper, on the other hand, I think is very intriguing. More card advantage, you know, or card quality at least for Tyrell. There's a lot of cool stuff you can search for. Obviously, it could be very interesting in some kind of false banner deck.
I think it's really, really good in Tyrell Brotherhood.
Brotherhood, ooh,
very good.
Yeah, I could see that. Go grab your neutrals. That's a good one to point out, that it can actually search for neutrals.
So I'm with you on Oathkeeper. Like, I think it's very, very good. I like Oathkeeper a ton. I love that it's non-Tyrell. Septa, I love the control shell that Tyrell is forming, but it does seem like a 3-for-1. But you're only using her for her control ability, so it doesn't seem as bad. I like her, though. Like, I would probably put one or two in there. In a control shell deck, maybe. Just depends on how far off the rails I'd like to get. What's your rating there, Will?
You know, for Tyrell here, I mean, I think this is a reasonable pack for them, but not phenomenal. I think I'm gonna favor Oathkeeper a little bit. That kind of, you know, really wide ranging search is probably gonna lead to some stuff that I'm not even seeing or thinking of or expecting yet.
Right.
So I think I'm probably gonna shoot for giving Tyrell a B out of this pack.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay. Yep. Nice.
I'm good with Zip. Yep.
We are of a one mind.
All right. Night's Watch. 2-cost character, power icon, 2-for-2 strength, young builder, non-unique. It is loyal, though. Builder traded. Bestow of 3. No attachments except weapon. Reaction, after Night's Watch location or attachment enters play under your control, discard 1 gold from young builder to draw 1 card. 2-cost event, the Rat Cook, non-loyal. It is a song. Marshalling action, choose a character with print cost X or lower. X is the number of steward characters you control. Till the end of the round, take control of that character and treat its printed text box as if it were blank, except for traits. So, young builder, it's okay. From playing builders last week, the slots are so tight that I don't think it fits in, honestly. But it could maybe fit a slot into, I don't know. Night's Watch already has good draw. That's the thing. Like, I'm not sure this finds a slot.
They don't have, a bestow build out of the rest of their cards. It's just been waiting for another couple cards to put it over the top, I don't feel.
Correct. At its like, cheapest, it's like a 3-for-2 monocon that gives you 1 card if you haven't already put out all your locations. I don't think it's very good, but I mean, someone might. The Rat Cook, I don't think is good, but I love it. Like, I love this card. Like, I am for sure slotting like 2 of these into my Night's Watch Wolf with Mag the Mighty. Just killing stuff. Like, I mean, that's why I love Night's Watch Wolf so much. Like, if you can continue to take over their people and just kill it, like, I'm not sure the Rat Cook is good, but I do love that card quite a bit. I give Night's Watch probably a C-.
You know, I think that doesn't sound, that doesn't sound too far off. These aren't terribly bad. I've already heard some stories of folks online with some kind of god plays with the Rat Cook that are turning out better than expected. But it's interesting to me, you know, you really have to have those steward characters, and that is not one of the 3 traits that's really taken off as a deck for Night's Watch at some point in its history. You know, we had Rangers pushed for a while and did okay. Obviously now builders are kind of a core deck archetype for Night's Watch, but stewards as a deck has not really existed. I don't know if this is enough to really nail that. I guess we'll see.
It'll be a fun card. It will be a fun card to play. Like, I don't think it'll be binder fodder, except for big tournaments it will be. But for, like, small tournaments, like, there will be fun decks that happen because of this. Like, you will eventually go to a tournament and get, like, wrecked by the rat.
Well, fun for the person playing it. Maybe not the person getting their stuff stolen.
Yes. Exactly. Like, someone's going to take, like, your Asha or, like, your Bell for, like, having five stewards out, and you're just going to be like, okay, sure. Like, it's going to be funny. So, what was your rating for?
I think C- actually does sound pretty reasonable.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. Awesome.
Okay, back over to me with Baratheon then. We've got, yep, Queen's Men. This is a non-unique, non-loyal Baratheon character. 3 costs, 2 strength, military and intrigue icons, ally and relore traits. Reaction, after you marshal Queen's Men, choose an opponent and look at his or her hand. Then you may kneel a non-Baratheon character to choose and discard 1 non-character card from that hand. And then Traitor to the Crown. This is a House Baratheon loyal attachment for 1. Condition trait, opponent's character only. An attached character does not contribute its strength to power challenges or to its controller's total for dominance. Well, I think this is interesting. I feel like the Queen's Men is part of the future that Beyond the Wall visited in their last episode. So kind of cool to finally see that crop up, and kind of cool to see another cheaper lore card. As centric as all of that stuff tends to be on Melisandre, I wasn't sure we would really see more cheap lore characters. So it's definitely interesting. But I think the biggest takeaway I have on Queen's Men is probably the hand knowledge. I mean, stripping a card out of their hand is a very strong effect. But I think a lot of times folks can overlook the amount of power that full hand knowledge gives the really kind of top tier players in a game like Game of Thrones. I've definitely watched some crazy games. It really comes to mind back when Bruno was playing the game in first edition, watching some of the stuff he was able to do and anticipate with knowledge of an opponent's hand turn after turn after turn. So I think this is cool. And, I kind of wonder if maybe Baratheon is going to have to turn harder into this type of effect to return to tournament relevance. I don't know. Traitor to the Crown, on the other hand, I dig. It's really got some similarities to the Martell attachment. I think Condemned is the power one.
I think so.
Yeah. But, a little bit of a difference. The character could still participate, just not counted strength. So if you've got some other characters, they could still be in there and use their stealth or renown or something. But not counting for dominance seems like a worthwhile trade-off. So I think I like it. It's definitely a different direction to take some of the Bera kind of power and dominance control kind of stuff. So
sure,
yeah. What do you think?
I adore Queensmen. It just makes Lancer really good, or any banner stag really good. But like in Lancer, it's essentially 6 Viper Eyes, these Viper Eyes don't have to be triggered. Like it's very good. I like it. And even if like say it's like just in a regular bear deck, like the stats are still good. Like the body is still super solid. Like it has useful traits. And Traitor to the Crown could be very good. I mean, we'll see. I mean, like, Bera is so hard to build out of right now just because it's, like, so low. But, I mean, I like Traitor to the Crown. I spoke with a few people at Red Saturday last weekend. Like, they enjoy the card, and, like, they're knowledgeable people of the game. It was, like, Sandy and Naj and people like that. So, I mean, it could be. I think it could be very good. I think Bera got a strong pack, actually.
Yeah, you mentioned in kind of some of that combo stuff. I remember back in the day, Bera's Son control used to be a thing. If you've got 6 of these sort of attachments floating around to just strip all of your opponent's power icons and just punch things through, I wonder if some kind of control with a more rushy angle might be possible there. You know, just make sure they can never defend power challenges and you just go to town with it. I don't know. Yeah. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, for sure. So what are you giving them?
Man, they're still Baratheon.
Yes, they are.
These cards intrigue me. but they don't by themselves. I don't think they push Barra to where it needs to be to get out of its rut in the meta as a whole. So I think these are maybe like C plus level impact for Baratheon right now.
Yeah. I was thinking like a B minus, because I think Queensmen is really good, and I think they need more Bicon, smaller bodies.
Don't be afraid to disagree.
Yeah, I think B minus. I'm going B minus. I think Trader could be very good as well. So
okay.
Yep. Moving on. Are we on Lannister now?
Yeah, you got Lannister.
Oh man, these cards are phenomenal. Maester at the Rock. 3 cost, 2 strength, non-unique, non-loyal character, intrigue icon only, Maester traded, reaction, after you play a Lannister event, kneel Maester at the Rock, move that event from your discard pile to the top of your deck. Whew, you gotta take a breather after reading that card.
I don't blame you, man.
3 cost, location, loyal, Ashmark, unique, the Westerlands traded, Bestow of 3. Reaction, after a phase begins, kneel and sacrifice Ashmark to return each character with Pentecost X or lower to its owner's hand. X is the number of gold on Ashmark. A plus. Like, these cards are both amazing. Like, phenomenal amazing. They both go in different Lannister builds. Like, Ashmark makes Clansmen just unreal. Like, especially if you could run like the bestow plot and just like have a first snow of 5 with Clansmen.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. And Maester at the Rock, like even something as simple, like not even getting cheeky with it, like just something as simple as treachery, like
yeah.
Unlimited treachery is like you can't do anything. Like, it's just, man, that's crazy. Those cards are both amazing.
Yeah, treachery is the one event that I've gotten to use Maester of the Rock with so far at our kind of Red Saturday Light tournament. And even just that, just my opponent knowing that I just put a treachery back in hand after canceling something important to begin with. Like, he was racking his brain after that, knowing that I could cancel with impunity. And that's just, like you said, like the most basic.
Yeah, yesterday on the Iron Throne, I was playing Martell Watch. I was playing a wall deck, and Maester at the Rock happened. Okay, like, I can't get past it because you continually treachery the wall. Like, ooh, over yeah. and over and over. Like, it was frustrating to play against. It was interesting, though. Like, it was super cool.
Yeah, I can't believe, I feel like other reviews have really lowballed Maester at the Rock, but I think he's phenomenal.
Oh, crazy good. Crazy good. I mean, like, yeah, I love them. I'm giving them an A+. I love Ashmark too. Like, I'm a sucker for anything Clansman. Like, Clansman has been my baby for a long time. So, like, it's probably going a little too high, but I don't care. Like, I love them.
Yeah, no, I think these are great cards. I mean, Ashmark takes some investment for sure. Lannister's maybe not quite as good at that gold production these days as Tyrell, but they've still got cards.
Oh yeah.
And Ashmark's effect is so huge and so wide reaching. You know, I might be a little worried with the big upswing in Greyjoy lately. I don't know that I want to invest, you know, 6 total gold in this just to have my opponent hit it with newly made Lord. But depending on how the meta kind of shakes out a little bit, I think Ashmark can just be phenomenal.
Yeah, that's fair. I messed around with Ashmark a little bit, and I really like it. I really, really like it. But I probably won't invest 6 gold into it unless I have like a treachery in hand to protect it, you know?
Yeah.
But I do understand where you're coming from for sure. Yeah, so what are you giving them?
I like these both a lot. I mean, Ashmark is so versatile, clearing their board of Chud, so you could really hit with, I don't know, military claim pushed by Jamie or something, or resetting to reuse your own clansmen or queen's assassins or something. And Maester of the Rock is just so open-ended with any Lannister event that's printed. Like, these are great. I think Lanny gets a plus out of this.
Heck yeah. There we go. And then you get some super fun cards next. I'm about these cards.
Yeah, okay, so this sends us over to Greyjoy. We've got Acolyte of the Waves. He's a non-unique and non-loyal two-cost character. One strength, then just a power icon. Drown God trait and interrupt when Acolyte of the Waves is killed. Gain one power for your faction. And then Naga's Ribs. It's a unique and loyal two-cost location. Iron Island Strait. For each character in your dead pile, Naga's Ribs contributes two strength to your total for dominance. Reaction, after a character is placed in your discard pile, move it to your dead pile. Acolyte is just, like, really reasonable, kind of efficient body at that low end of the curve. Like, it does its little bitty thing and moves on. It helps you, you know, kind of smooth out your curve, have stuff for setup. Like, it does everything I want in a cheap character in second edition. Even in a general sense, even aside from any Drown God trait shenanigans, just, you know, claim soak and I get a power out of the deal. I would take that in, I think, any house, honestly.
Yep.
And Naga's Ribs, I think, is really cool. I almost wish that it had been like a cycle to a cycle and a half earlier. Back when people were really complaining about the whole chair and table decks out of Baratheon and such, if there had been another house that had to work for it for a little bit, but that could kind of compete with Vera for the dominance phase back then, I think that would have been really interesting. That factor is a little lost right now when Vera is so far kind of down in the field. I feel like this keeps it down. But it's really cool for what it does for Greyjoy. It gives them an extra angle. It lets you start seeding, you know, your Drowned God guys without having to have them, killed by your opponent's plots or military claim or something. You could be sacrificing your own guys to fall in favor to get a boatload of, you know, income and initiative, and then moving them to your dead pile to start cycling them. Or bringing them back with air on damp hair or something. So I like both these.
Yeah, I've been a big proponent of Drowned God for a really, really long time. I think Acolyte of the Waves makes its way almost into every Greyjoy deck, not even Drowned God. Like, it's just a really solid body, and it just gives you power for doing nothing, for like just claim soak. It's amazing. Naga's Ribs will hold its place in decks built for Naga's Ribs. I don't think Naga's Ribs makes its way into every Greyjoy deck right now, but like, if they continue on this dominance theme for Greyjoy, or just like things in your dead piles, and like, it could run out of a red door toolbox for sure. Like, if you open against Bera, if you open Naga's Ribs, then like, if you red door against Bera, then you could open Naga's Ribs and like really help yourself, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I think Greyjoy got a really, really solid pack.
Yeah, I think these are really strong options. Maybe not quite as wow worthy as Lannister, but I think I probably still give Greyjoy like a B plus out of this.
Yeah, I'll give him a solid B. I want to see Naga's Ribs in action. Really, Acolyte's really good, so I give him a solid B.
Okay, sounds reasonable.
Yeah, moving on to some other really good cards. This pack is strong, man.
It's a good way to kick
Targaryen. Yeah, it is. It is. 7 cost, 6 strength, unique non-loyal character, Dario Naharis. He's companion and mercenary traded. He has a bicon. We have military and intrigue. Intrigue is something that Targ always needs. Renown. He does have native renown. Reaction, after you win a challenge which Dario Naharis is attacking, choose another ally, companion, or mercenary character. Stand that character and take control of him until the end of the phase. Let's see. We have a 1-cost Targaryen attachment. Non-unique. Dothraki character only. reaction after you win a military challenge which attacks characters attacking Sacrifice Bloody Iraq, then you may initiate an additional military challenges phase, max one per phase. Ooh, pretty solid. Pretty solid. I'm Dario's a 7 drop, so with the current meta we're in right now, I think we have to judge 7 costers a lot more harshly than they deserve. Like, I think Dario has, like, 6 strength is nothing to shy away from in this game. He has the right icons. He has Native Renown. I think it's going to be really hard to fit more of than just like a 1x of him in decks. And then Bloody Rock in the right deck is gross. Like, if this was out for like Jim Hansen's deck for Worlds, it would have been disgusting.
Ooh,
like, yeah. With the height of like Tired Crossing happening right now, like that's so good, and it's non-unique. Like, if you get those in the braids going, it's really gross. So how do you feel, Will?
You know, I think I like him. I like that you're really hitting the renown there on Dario. I think along with the really nice strength and icon spread, like you said, that the renown may actually be one of the biggest factors for Targaryen. That's not something they've had available to them outside of what Drogo natively, and then Dany, if you've got the right hatchling. Am I forgetting anything?
You know, it's only Drogo. It's the only native renown.
And that power gain is so much more prevalent in second edition. So many houses have some options to do it, you know, particularly with renowned characters that, and it's not like Targaryen has not been holding its own without it by any means, but now that they've got a little more renown in the mix, I think that could be a bigger boost even than his ability. And it's a good ability.
Right. It is a good ability. I think anything like any trait hate we will see will only become more prevalent. Like, anytime a card pool continues to get bigger with common traits, like, Dario will continue to get better.
Yeah. As more allies, companions, and mercenaries interplay, that's a lot of traits he hit.
It is. So if the investment for you is not there right now, I do think he should be a solid one of, but if he is not, then I think he will only get better. So you should always revisit him.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And Bloody Rock, I mean, extra challenges are big. We've seen people really, you know, talk about that in relation to cards we already had. Drogo notably starting it out way back in Corset days. And,
well, yeah, Malucci touched on a really strong point last night on Second Sons, and he was just talking about how, like, the Drogo retail first turn in Targ was brutal for so long, but then, like, it was just the inefficiency of drawing Drogo, so you really just held off it for a while. But if it happens, it's so strong. But, like, now if you have 6 options in the deck that can happen with, like, it's... I mean, if you could wipe a board first turn, it is tough to come back from.
Yes, it still is at this point.
Yep, I agree. So I give them a B+. I think both cards are very useful, and very good. They fit good slots for the house in their current meta right now.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to look at. These really slot in well to where their house is in the meta right now. To help kind of round that out or offer some redundancy, which I think stands pretty good. I think I think I may even go fully A. I think I may come to regret that later if Dario sees less play than expected thanks to Valor Doharis, but I'm gonna go A.
That makes sense. Cool. All right, so you get the Martell cards.
Yeah, sure enough. First up, we've got the unique non-loyal Daria Sand. She's 2 cost, 1 strength with an intrigue icon, bastard and sand snake traits. And reaction after Daria Sand enters play, Choose another character with print cost X or lower and return it to its owner's hand. X is the number of Sand Snake characters you control. And then we have the Water Gardens. This one is a unique loyal location for one Dorne trait. And action, kneel the Water Gardens to reduce the cost of the next non-character you marshal, play, or ambush this phase by X. X is the number of plot cards in your used pile. I mean, Daria seems fun, even if you're just hitting, you know, like a one or two cost claim chud and getting them out of the way so that you can come back and hit them a little harder on military claim, which hopefully you're going second as Martell anyway, so you're able to bounce them before they can replay that character, or after they're able to replay it, really is what I meant. That seems good. But Water Gardens, I think, is the one that really gets me. That's
decks will be built around Water Gardens. Like, Water Gardens is busted. Yeah. It is super.
Yeah, such good.
My God.
And without having to, you know, invest a bunch extra to make it vulnerable, like, you know, bestow or something. It's just one drop.
So if we even get like four, let's say even three, because we have a few now. So let's say we get 3 to 4 solid playable Sand Snakes in this box, then like we are like creeping into like a Harmon Euler Water Gardens box where like everything is ambushable.
Yeah. And maybe ambushable and just, for zero or something, you know?
Yeah, already. Yeah, I mean, like the characters won't be able to like
this. Oof.
Yeah, just being able to bounce around like the Venomous Blade for free and you don't know it after plot 3.
Yeah.
And then and all this plot stuff just gets ridiculous with the announcement of the wars to come.
Right.
Right?
And
10 youth plots, like
if you can draw the game out.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Which Martell is good about.
That's true. That's true. I
think Water Gardens is really good right now, and I think Daria will be good if we ever get to the point where a tribal Sand Snake deck is viable.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, I think she'll be really good if a tribal Sand Snake is viable, you know, and you can be using, the trader to the bestow guy to bounce her back to hand and stuff.
Yep.
Which I think will be great. Heck, even low key stuff like I used to do with Yoren, you know, play a Yoren and then sacrifice him to Fallen from Favor or a March to the Wall or something, and then replay another copy out of hand. Even that sort of stuff, she's yep. Going
to
be cool.
We also have Iron Bank now,
exactly, which is, you know, probably the better way to do that kind of thing. Make some money, not lose a card.
Yeah. No, you're good. It's still really solid. So what are you giving the old Martell house here?
I think, I feel like the Water Gardens is better than Daria. She's not quite there. She's good, but not quite in the same league. But the Water Gardens is so good that I think I probably still give Martell at least an A out of this. I'm debating a bit about going A+.
I think I give him a B+ or an A-. I think Water Gardens is very, very good. And, Daria, I just don't think sees play until we get the Martell box, just because the 2-cost slot is Bastard's Daughter and Hand Destruction is just so key in this game right now. Like it hits so hard. But I do like her. I do like her, but I love Water Garden. So I think I'm going A- or B+, probably B+.
Okay. Sounds reasonable to me. All right. We're on the home stretch with the last 3 cards, the neutrals. How about we hit them awesome. One at a time and see how the end of this pack goes?
Sure. 7 cost character, 11 strength. Unique, military icon only, Mag the Mighty, Giant, Wildling Traded, Renown, no attachments except weapon, Forced reaction, after you win a challenge at which Magnemite is participating, choose and kill a character you control, then the losing opponent chooses and kills a character he or she controls. I like it a lot.
It's pretty cool. I mean, I like it from a thematic sense, nothing else. I like that 11 strength for the King of the Giants, you know? Shouldn't he have the king trait, though?
I don't know. Maybe.
I feel like he should.
I mean, they had room for it.
Exactly.
I mean, they've made some mistakes on traits before. Yeah, I like him. I like him for degenerate reasons because, so before all this, like, I don't care to say it now, but like before all this hype or whatever, like, I've been planning on taking Brienne to Chicago for like a month and a half now. Like, I've been about the Brienne deck. I was proxying Brienne and stuff like before. And then when I saw that this card was coming out, I was like, well, this answers the problem because you have to have something dead in your dead pile. So I love this card. And then Italy also figured the deck out, I guess. So it's okay. I know people are a little harsh on combo. I think it's fine, but I do like Magnemite just for Alas the Giants. Like, an 11 strength auto kill, and he also has Intimidate, is very strong.
Yeah. Yeah. When he has that Intimidate, it's pretty great. And speaking of, you know, I'd be tempted to try him out in some variety of Brotherhood deck. If I can keep giving him Intimidate turn after turn, if I have a stream of chuds of my own to throw in front of him, I think that could be pretty brutal to be facing down.
I agree. I do enjoy him.
So what kind of rating would you give him then?
Probably a C. I think he's got good abilities, but he's a hard 7. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think a lot of people are going to be hard casting him.
That's fair.
So C, I think, is fair.
Yeah, I think.
What about you?
I think the cost is a pretty big killer. A neutral 7 cost is more like, you know, 9 or so compared to an in-house.
Correct.
So that does make it kind of tough. So I think I like him maybe a smidge better, but not a ton. Maybe like a C plus. So,
gotcha. Very cool. All right. So moving on, you're on the Iron Bank.
Yes, sir. This one is going to be a neutral 1 cost location. Bravo's trait, bestow 1. Not very impressive there, but here's where it gets cool. During the marshalling phase, you may spend gold on the Iron Bank as if it were in your gold pool. Reaction, after you collect income, move X gold from the treasury to the Iron Bank. X is the number of gold on the Iron Bank. How's that for compound interest right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this. I like this a lot. It reminds me actually a lot of the water gardens that we were just looking at, growing turn after turn. The water gardens, I think, is maybe a little more straightforward. And of course, setup friendly. The Iron Bank, you never want to deplete it, right? Otherwise, you're not getting anything. So you got to, I think, let it set for a couple turns. You can't play it on setup because you can't bestow. And then you probably want to let it set for a couple turns to start collecting this income. But if you can set up a game state where you can afford to wait for a few turns to start cashing it in, then it's going to be quite the engine.
All right. So this is why in my podcast, I don't do trash pack reviews because I feel like I will just be proven wrong all the time.
Oh, I do, particularly on the patience.
Yeah, I think this card is offensively bad. Like, I think this is the worst card in the pack. Like, I will not play it, for sure. Someone will wreck me with it, I'm sure. And, like, I will love it. Like, I love to be proven wrong. Like, I've been wrong on major cards before. Like, I was wrong on Big Mel. Like, I thought she was garbage. And, like, then she just started wrecking face. Like, I've been wrong. I just, like, we're in a rush meta. Like, I just, I don't know. I don't think it, I just don't like it at all. It literally is. It reminds me of Case Merchant, honestly.
Ooh.
Like, it's, I don't
we
know.
We can all agree.
I'm not a fan of it at all. Yes, it is very bad. So I hope I'm proven wrong on the Iron Bank, right? Like, I hope someone just, like, wrecks me with it. When someone wrecks me with something that I think is a bad card, I actually get happy because I'm like, well, someone figured out something I didn't, yeah. Right? Like, I love the innovation of deck building within this game. But I don't think it'll fit its way into many of my decks very soon.
Yeah, I think it has to go in some really specific decks. You know, maybe you could go a couple different ways with this, or maybe there's a good way to combine them. But I think either decks that really want to try and drag the things out and stall the opponent out till the Iron Bank gets there, or that wants to really try and abuse bestow and like putting extra gold on it through those various effects and try to ramp it up hard as fast as possible. But I don't think decks are going to be great. I think those are going to be fiddly fun game night decks, not tourney decks.
So I think the deck that you're talking about, the first one that came to my mind was Martel, but like Martel has Water Gardens, right?
So do you need this?
And like they have the long plan and they have feast. Yeah, I just like think it's like going to be like really tight for slots.
Yeah.
So I think like we're getting to that point like on a competitive level that like decks are just so tight for slots at this point. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But my rating is an F.
Wow. I can't go quite that far. I was gonna give it about a D plus. More income is always
fun. Fair.
This just may be bad income.
That's fair. That is fair. Yeah, which leads us to the most anticipated card since, I don't know, Valor?
Other Valor?
I feel like this card has been talked about. Yeah, yeah. So, Valor to Horus, it's a plot. 4 gold, 5 initiative, 1 claim, 6 reserve. It is a plot deck limit 1. Omen traded, so Craster is immune. When revealed, each player chooses any number of characters he or she controls with total printed cost 10 or lower. Place each character not chosen on the bottom of its owner's deck. Cannot be saved. I love that card. So I played with it this weekend. Thinking about going to this weekend, I was going into Red Saturday, which I didn't know the New York meta. It was the first time I'd ever been to the city. I was going to play Brienne. I was going to play combo. But I respect Roy. I like Roy. Roy's not a huge fan of combo, so I did not bring it. I brought builders because me, Roy, Glazer, and CT all were going to play builders, which was a really good deck. We just did not expect as much Targ. So we were all kind of underwhelmed by Valar to Horus because it didn't do a lot. But here's why I don't think it did a lot. I don't think it did a lot because literally every other competitive person there built a deck that was solid for Valar to Horus, which means that everyone building their deck kept that card in mind. Like, how many cards are in the current meta keep like you from making decisions, like making decisions within deck building in every single deck and every single house? Like, this will always be on our mind from now on, right?
I agree. I had a kind of a similar thing over the weekend at our homage tournament where, you know, all day I was afraid I was going to be hit with Valor to Horus. Nobody played it, I think, out of the dozen people we had. But I thought for sure someone would be. And it changed how I played, how I marshaled, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it changed a lot for us and even people who are underwhelmed by it. I say give it another chance and or just look at the field and notice like how people are marshalling, how people are taking claim. It's just as predictable as Valar Morghulis if you are paying attention. So, but I think it will always be in the meta as long as it's not as long as it's in rotation, it will always be in the meta. I think it's very strong.
Yeah.
I give it an A plus.
And I
sure.
think this is a nice, hopefully maybe kind of, yeah, I am a little wary of getting too many resets in the meta, in the pool, but I'm hoping that this is maybe like a nice kind of angle that hadn't been covered before. We've got a lot of resets now that make you think about it and keep different considerations and different kinds of pacing in mind. And like you said, things to watch for that your opponent's doing to give you clues that I like that now.
Yep. So I don't want to get off too far off the rails here, but I do want to ask you, because you've played the game for how many years?
15.
So you're like a godfather. So you've seen it all, right? You played almost the entirety of CCG.
Yeah,
correct?
I missed just the very first base set.
Oh wow! So then you played all of 1.0, all of 2.0. Why are you scared of too many resets? Like what? Like what fears you for the game? Like new beginners coming in? Like we just don't see as many big guys where like it's not as thematic, or what bothers you about too many resets?
You know, not seeing the big guys doesn't bother me that much, because I've been through different periods of the game. You know, first edition became notorious for this, where the big named characters were, you know, barely played or were a single copy to a deck, and everything else was kind of chud. I kind of grew accustomed to that, but it's, I think, more of the kind of existential dread sort of NPE. Like, I personally like the interplay and the back and forth. I love playing control decks. Like, I like playing multiple resets in one plot deck. I've talked about that. You know, if I had a nickel for every time I talked about that on the show, I would be a rich man. But the flip side is I've seen enough other players, particularly the new players and the kind of low to mid tier players, not meaning to knock anybody, but the folks that are really the lifeblood of, you know, a thriving community scene, you know, that you don't really have a game if it's only the top, you know, 10% of players that are left turning up at tournaments, right? I've seen where those people who tend towards kind of a more constructive deck and play style, where they want to get their cool dudes out, they want to do their neat thing. If the game ever gets to the point where, you know, that's just being wiped turn after turn after turn, that gives NPE in my mind, you know, that point where they really just aren't having fun anymore. I don't necessarily think we're there with these, but it's just something I'm always wary of every time I see another reset added.
I agree. So, competitively, I love resets. Like, I think that resets are very rewarding to good players. They're very unrewarding to bad players. But as a casual, just like we have a lot of casual players in our town. Like, there's very few of us that are like hyper competitive, or even can play on a competitive level with like deck building. Literally, our G&Ks are getting to the point where, like, there's 10 people there and, like, 9 of my decks are in the field. But, like, we do have a rule that, like, outside of, like, tournament plays, like, we're just doing casual plays, like, don't run more than one reset in your deck. Just because, like, for new players, it's very, very frustrating. Like, I know it is. If I've gotten you into the game and you're sold on it and, like, you're bought in and, like, you're playing, like, you'll take licks. Like, you deserve the licks just like everyone else took when they first started playing. But if you're a new player that we're trying to get into the game, into the community, then, like, resets are frustrating. Like, oh, I'll marshal Eddard and Catelyn and then die. Like, that is just a frustrating part of the game that we have to have for competitive. But I think if you are one of the members of the community who run local events or just local nights, like, I think running a one reset or just allowing new players to do things, like whether you're trying to pull from Magic or from other games or just really casual people, then like I think you should protect their fun for the game, right? Like, they should be able to do cool things with cards. And you shouldn't be playing control against them or just, like, wrecking their face.
Yeah, that's always something.
Because we all want the same thing. We all want the game to grow. Whether it's competitive, I mean, competitively we all want that, but, like, casually as well, because if the casual players go, then, like, our game goes too. Yeah. So, I'm a big proponent of just allowing people to do things, like, have fun. Because it is a fun game. It is a very fun game.
Heck yeah. I mean, there's a reason I've kept with it this long. I mean, most of that reason's like
15 but, years.
You know, the game's pretty cool too.
Yeah, yeah, that's like a godfather of the game. 15 years. That's crazy. Yeah,
I feel pretty ancient now.
That's awesome. that's phenomenal.
The years, I don't know what the driver's license age is for all the states and countries where listeners are, but in my home state of Missouri, the number of years I've been playing this game could get a driver's permit now. So there you go.
I love it. You're almost driving. Yeah. There we go. So I would give Valar D an A plus. I think it's just going to be a big portion of the game forever.
I agree. Its usage, I'm sure, will, you know, come and go with different flavors, much like First Snow of Winter has. But you can't say that it isn't always still a consideration.
Yep, I agree. Overall, this pack maybe has not been the most powerful pack we've ever gotten, for sure. But I believe it is the most, if you look through the cards, it is the most innovative within deck building that we have ever gotten. Like, every card, almost every card in the pack, like, has a slot in certain decks that maybe make that deck very strong or stronger. And I think that's very cool. Like, I really enjoy this pack.
Yeah, there's a ton of cool stuff in it that I like.
And the artwork is beautiful. They hit a home run with a lot of the artwork.
They've been stepping up that game for the most part. All right, little prop and slop action.
Sure.
No, I was going to put you on the spot with that. I'm sure you had to by now, right?
I did. Let's see. Yeah, I've got a prop. Prop to Roy Rogers and the New York City Meta. I met Glazer for the first time. Phenomenal human being. Hung out with a lot of the New York guys. They put on an awesome tournament. And so props to them, Sandy, everyone, for putting us up. It was a really, really great experience. And if you've never experienced it, I urge you to go to Dance with Dragons or Red Saturday. It was just really, really cool. So
awesome.
That is my prop. You got a prop?
You know, let's see. This week
we got a slop first.
I don't really know what I would slop at the moment. This week I think my prop is gonna be the Black Saturday. Wow. Black Friday deals. I've been begging Kristen to let me get a new TV for a while, and we finally saw a sweet enough deal on a 65-inch curved, ultra high definition Samsung that convinced her it was worth it to pull the trigger. So that's my prop to new TVs.
Heck yeah, that's awesome.
Now that I just need awesome. To take a that's week awesome. Off of work to watch movies and play video games on it.
Yeah. Let's see. It is this. I guess props to Windy City. Brian Bleers, we're putting on the tournament. That'll happen. But actual, because this will air when? Well,
okay, so this episode that we are recording now should air on the 8th of December.
8th of December. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so huge props to a GNK that is happening in Indianapolis. If you are close, you should come and hang out, because we are doing a kit for Lord of the Rings. We are doing a GNK for Thrones, and we are going to Star Wars that night. So it will be a very fun-filled day.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty excited. Pretty excited. I've never played Lord of the Rings, so CT's getting me into it. He's been big into it for a long time. Nope, that would be my first time.
The LCG, right?
Yep, the LCG.
Oh, yeah. I love it. It's obviously a very different kind of feel and pace from Game of Thrones, but...
I play a lot of Arkham.
Okay.
And I do love Lord of the Rings. I just wasn't into card games then. So, I've been looking forward to it for a while now. And there's a very good chance I just get into the game if I like it, because CT says it is an amazing game. And then I have Hansen talk to me about it, and like he says it's unreal. So I only hear good things about the game.
Oh yeah, it's good. Luke, of course, would recommend it to you as well.
Yep.
And you know, I just there as a co-op game, there's just some very different things that it can do that would feel just crazy, impossible in a competitive head-to-head game like Thrones. You know, offhand, for instance, I can't remember his name now, but one of the elf heroes, you know, you start the game with them, they're effectively kind of like house cards and agendas combined, and characters. I don't know, it's a little bit of everything. But anyway, he has you draw 3 extra cards during the draw phase every turn, plus your regular draw, and then you have to discard your whole hand at the end of every turn. Like, I don't know, that's just one of those things I look at and I'm like, that's so cool, and there is no way you could do that in Thrones.
Yeah, that's nuts. Yeah, so that should be a good day. Should be a good day. Very excited about Star Wars. And yeah, very good, very good cool stuff. Do you have any more?
You know, it's been a fairly slow week for me on most fronts. You know, general slops to other drivers sucking. If you're listening to this podcast, use your friggin' turning signal. But other than that, I think that's it.
Yep. No slops for me. I'll always end it on a high
good
note.
Plan.
Try to stay good. So, yep. I appreciate you letting me come on this week, and hopefully we didn't butcher too many cards you guys liked. And if we did, then prove us wrong.
Yeah, and tell us. Definitely tell us whatever you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I love feedback. Always. I love to talk Thrones, so I'm always
heck
available.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on, man. It was awesome to have you, and yep. I am certain we'll have you guest again for too terribly long. So with that, I think we close another chapter of the White Book.
Awesome.
Danger Zone.